Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Mania's Panics and Crashes, A History of Financial Crises is an economics and financial history book by Charles P. Kindleberger and Robert Z. Alaber. It examines how speculative booms form, why they repeatedly end in panic, and how credit conditions magnify instability across different eras and countries. Rather than treating crises as random accidents, the book argues that they follow recurring behavioral and institutional patterns that can be traced through centuries of market history. Its purpose is both explanatory and practical, to give readers a framework for understanding bubbles, leverage, contagion, and collapse, while also showing why financial systems remain vulnerable, even when the participants believe they are rational. The book is widely used by students of economics, bankers, policymakers, and investors because it combines historical episodes with a structured model of crisis development. By linking theory to memorable examples, it offers a durable lens for interpreting financial turmoil. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the six-stage crisis cycle that organizes the whole book, a central contribution of the book, is its recurring sequence of crisis formation, usually described through stages such as displacement, speculation, credit expansion, euphoria, distress, and panic. This framework matters because it turns financial crises from isolated events into a recognizable process. A displacement creates a new source of profit expectation, such as a technological change, policy shift, or external shock. Once participants begin to believe prices will keep rising, speculation spreads, credit becomes easier, and leverage increases. The book shows that the crisis is not caused only by one bad decision or one flawed institution, but by a dynamic interaction among expectations, borrowing, and imitation. The value of the model is that it helps readers see the warning signs earlier. Rising optimism, easier lending, and asset price acceleration are not neutral developments in this account. They are part of the mechanism that leads to instability. The book is distinctive because it uses a clear sequence to explain why booms often contain the seeds of their own collapse. Secondly, how credit expansion turns optimism into systemic fragility. The book gives exceptional attention to credit because it is the force that transforms speculation into a broader financial threat. When credit conditions loosen during a boom, investors can buy more assets than their own resources would normally allow, which pushes prices even higher and attracts additional participants. This creates a self-reinforcing pattern. Rising prices justify more lending, and more lending pushes prices further upward. The book stresses that credit is typically procyclical, meaning it expands in good times and contracts in bad times, which makes financial systems unstable by design. That insight is one of the book's most important policy lessons. It implies that crises are not just the result of greed or irrationality in the abstract. They are amplified by the structure of finance itself. Once confidence weakens, lenders retreat, borrowers are forced to sell, and asset prices can fall sharply. The book uses this mechanism to explain why even sound-looking markets can become fragile when leverage accumulates across many actors at once. Thirdly, historical case studies that show the same pattern across centuries. The book is built around historical examples that demonstrate the persistence of the crisis pattern across time and geography. It discusses well-known episodes such as the Tulip Mania, the South Sea Bubble, the Great Depression, the Japanese Asset Bubble, and the 2008 financial crisis. These are not included merely for color. They serve as evidence that bubbles and crashes are recurring features of market economies. By comparing different periods, the book shows that the instruments change, but the underlying behavior often does not. Speculation, leverage, optimism, and then forced liquidation appear again and again in different settings. This historical method is important because it prevents readers from assuming that a crisis is unprecedented simply because the assets or technologies involved are new. The book argues that new financial products may look modern, but the human and institutional dynamics behind them are often familiar. That comparative structure is one reason the book remains influential. It provides a long historical memory for readers who might otherwise focus only on the most recent event. Fourthly, psychology and herd behavior as major drivers of market excess. Beyond credit and institutions. The book pays close attention to the psychological side of financial crises. It portrays investors as highly responsive to the behavior of others, especially when rising prices seem to validate speculative beliefs. This creates herd behavior, in which people buy not because an asset is intrinsically useful or profitable, but because they expect to sell it later at a higher price. The book suggests that euphoria is especially dangerous because it suppresses skepticism and makes caution look outdated. As confidence rises, participants become less sensitive to risk and more willing to borrow aggressively. When the mood shifts, the same psychology works in reverse: fear spreads quickly, and efforts to exit become self-defeating because everyone wants liquidity at the same time. This focus on behavior gives the book a practical edge. It shows that markets are not governed only by models or rules. They are also shaped by imitation, fear, and overconfidence. That perspective helps explain why rational warnings often fail during a boom and why panic can become so rapid once trust breaks down. Lastly, policy lessons why regulation and lender restraint matter. The book is not only diagnostic, it also implies a set of policy lessons about how crises might be limited or softened. Because booms are reinforced by expanding credit and weakening standards, the book suggests that regulation, lender discipline, and timely intervention can matter enormously. Its historical examples imply that waiting until panic begins is usually too late, since forced selling and declining confidence quickly overwhelm ordinary market corrections. The book, therefore, supports the idea that financial stability requires more than confidence in self-correcting markets. It also requires institutions that restrain excessive leverage and notice when asset prices are becoming detached from fundamentals. At the same time, the book is realistic about the limits of policy. It does not claim that crises can be eliminated entirely, only that their severity may be reduced if policymakers understand the cycle in advance. This gives the book lasting relevance for central bankers, regulators, and investors. It combines historical evidence with a warning that financial systems need guardrails precisely when optimism makes such guardrails seem unnecessary. In conclusion, Manias, Panics, and Crashes is best suited for readers who want a serious, historically grounded explanation of financial instability. Economists, finance students, central bankers, policymakers, and investors will all find value in it, but in different ways. Students gain a durable framework for understanding bubbles and crashes. Practitioners gain a warning system for recognizing leverage, exuberance, and fragile credit conditions. Policymakers gain perspective on why crises recur even after earlier disasters appear to have taught the obvious lessons. What makes the book stand out is its combination of long-run historical comparison and a simple, durable crisis model. Many books on financial turmoil focus on a single episode, a single market, or a single theory. This one connects multiple centuries of events and shows that the basic pattern is strikingly stable. It is especially useful because it does not treat panic as a mystery. Instead, it explains how credit, expectations, and crowd behavior interact to produce familiar outcomes in new settings. For readers seeking breadth, historical depth, and practical interpretive power, it remains one of the most influential books in its category. If you would like to support Robert Zialiber, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.